Welcome back to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Angela Bachman. I'm here with Brittany Sheets.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us today and coming to hang out. We've been having lots of fun talking about a lot of cool things. And right now, we've got two of our favorite lawyers in the studio. We got our friends at Healy and Hornack Inn. Welcome back, guys.
Glad to be here.
All right. So we were just talking, just getting ready here, all kinds of different things going on. Where do you want to start? There's some Verizon work you guys have been doing, all kinds of things.
Yeah, there's a nationwide Verizon strike going on now, about 40,000 workers off. Their contract expired last July. Still don't have a contract. This is a company that can clearly afford to pay decent wages and benefits. And really is a struggle to preserve middle-class jobs.
Definitely. I just can't believe I didn't realize that they haven't had a contract since last July. I've been reading up about this, but I thought it was only in the past couple, maybe like 5-6 months, not almost a year.
No, it's there have been contract extensions. The original contract expired last July.
Okay.
But, bargaining has gone very, very slowly.
Yeah, I think slow is being kind.
I mean, my instant reaction is to say it's probably greed, but why has it gone so slowly?
I think, bluntly, Verizon's corporate strategy is to shrink the union, to shrink the union part of the company, which is the landline and the cable part of the company, while they expand the wireless division and to block the union from getting into wireless. The union's penetrated wireless a little bit, but not to the extent that they control landlines and cable.
I hadn't realized that they actually didn't have very much wireless involvement at all.
They don't. Several places have been organized in the New York City area, but around here, none of the wireless, in western Pennsylvania, none of the wireless is organized at this point.
And one of the big things that they're asking for is to not have the call centers sent overseas, right?
Yeah. I'll try not to get on too much of a tangent, but when I was on the City Cable Commission, Verizon was supposed to set up locations for people to work in call centers. And when the question was asked, where are the call centers located? It says, well, we'll have call centers and people work there. And we said, well, call centers better be in Pittsburgh or Allegheny County or we'll have an issue. And they've been shipping a lot of the call centers overseas, and that's a big issue.
It's an unfortunate issue, too. I'd keep them here, guys. I don't know. There's another provision I know that they've been arguing a bit over. It's the Verizon's ability to transplant people kind of when they want to.
Yeah, I'm not at the bargaining table. What I do know about it is that they want greater management discretion to transfer people from here to there, which undermines seniority rights, bidding rights. And if you have a family situation, especially if you have kids, you don't want to be getting transferred, you know, to different states, different locations. It's really disruptive to families.
Yeah, I know. I definitely agree. I know they've been out for, what, is it almost a month now? It's like just short of a month,
just
I think.
Just short of a month, yeah.
Yeah. As I always say, my disclaimer out there, guys, like when, if you drive past a picket line, you know, stop by and say, hey, you know, give them like a beep of your horn, give them a thumbs up, give them a wave, drop off some pizza, give them some coffee and just do something. Hey, it brightens their day. It keeps the morale up.
Keeps the morale up because picket lines, you know, when you're on strike for a long time, it's hard after a while and it gets financially stressful. Mm-hmm. So that really helps a lot. I know a lot of the local politicians, Congressman Doyle, Mayor Peduto, County Executive Fitzgerald, have been out at the picket lines expressing support. So that helps a lot.
Yeah, it definitely does. Just any support you can give them. Do you know of any, you know, like do's and don'ts for the picket line? Maybe some friendly advice, especially if someone wants to go visit a picket line?
funny you mentioned that. Yeah, there's a statewide injunction order in place, which restricts the number of people the union can have on the picket line. But the basic legal restrictions are common sense. You can't block sidewalks, you can't block entrances. You can holler at people, you can make statements, you can support the strikers verbally. But no violence, no blocking, things like that.
We haven't been called into court for anything, so, you know, we've
worked everything out.
That's right, so far anyway.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Are there any stories you're willing to share?
No, you know, one of the interesting things, and this is something I'd like listeners to think about. And in most states, except for New Jersey and California, you have no First Amendment rights to demonstrate on a shopping mall. Now, a lot of Ryzen wireless stores are in shopping malls. Oh. Under federal labor law, we have a right to picket there, you know, at the location of the wireless stores, but not under the First Amendment. So we've been having to work through some of those situations.
Yeah. From my understanding, I believe the Settlers Ridge location in Robinson, they were up there picketing, but from my understanding, I think they've since been removed. And it's not so much a shopping mall, it's almost like a strip mall-y kind of sort of setup.
Is that the call center?
No, the call center is actually down the street. This was a Verizon wireless center. Yeah.
Still should be there, but okay. but they might have decided to pick it elsewhere. I'm not sure.
Oh, that's possible. I know Charles went past one day and they were there, and then he didn't see them there again. I was like, huh. But they are at the call center. I have seen them there. I've given them some solidarity support.
Yeah. Yeah, they're allowed 6 pickets per location, and any entrances at a location, so 6 at a wireless store. If it's like, for example, the 7th Street building downtown, there's 2 or 3 or 4 entrances, so they can have 6 pickets at each entrance. Picket lines have been pretty calm. People have been obeying the law. They've been getting a lot of support, which is really appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That definitely makes it easier, I think, if the community gets behind you and rallies behind you. I think it's easier with a common cause of knowing that Verizon makes, I think it's like $1.8 billion a month in profits, something absolutely ridiculous.
They're doing quite well. This isn't a strike about what they can afford or what they can't afford. This is just... they're trying to shrink the union. It's their goal. It's somewhat similar, although it's a strike situation, similar to the ATI steelworker situation, where ATI was trying to, you know, blunt the strength of the union. Mm-hmm. It's the same dynamic.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Definitely here's to keeping them strong, keeping them out on the line, and hoping that we continue to have no real serious problems.
Yeah, it's a great presence downtown, right, you know, around the 7th Avenue building that Mike was talking about. So give them your support if you're walking by.
Good. And speaking of rallying and support, what's the latest on the Fight for 15?
Fight for 15, they had their national strike April 14th. At least 100 to 200 cities in the States, many cities in Europe and in Asia. With a lot of sort of international support and coordination. There was a big rally in the Oakland section of the city of Pittsburgh. They were on strike all day. And then there was about close to 1,000 people rallying for the Fight for 15. It included fast food workers, hospital workers, security guards, janitors, other low-wage workers. A good rally. We're busy right now dealing with unfair labor practices that have been committed by McDonald's, Wendy's, and those folks. There have been number of threats. There's been a number of discharges we're dealing with, and they're before the National Labor Relations Board. The nationwide case against McDonald's has been going on for about a month now in New York City, and that's going to go on at least the rest of the year. It's just a massive case, and there's tens of thousands of documents that have to be sorted through. So
We have to take a quick break, but I'd like to learn a little bit more about what that case is about when we come back. I'm Angela Bachman, and you're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
I'm Edward James Olmos, and I'm here with my local letter carriers and store clerks from the United Food and Commercial Workers to remind you that Saturday, May 14th is the annual Stamp on Hunger food drive. The reality of hunger in our communities is disturbing. 1 in 7 Americans does not have enough to eat. That includes seniors, children, even military veterans. But you can help in the fight against hunger, and it's easy. Just leave a bag of non-perishable food by your mailbox the morning of Saturday, May 14th, and your letter carrier will do the rest. All food collected goes directly to food banks and pantries in your community. Hunger in America is a real problem, but we can all be part of the solution. Saturday, May 14th, please join me, the National Association of Letter Carriers, and their partners, and stamp out hunger.
Back to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Angela Bachman, and I'm here with Brittany Sheets today.
Thank you all for tuning in and joining us. We've been having a lot of fun, and we hope you've been enjoying the show with us. And back with us right now, we've got Mike Healy and Jay Hornack. Guys, welcome back.
Hello. Nice to be back.
All right. So we left off. We were talking about McDonald's and some big cases, discussions, whatnot, and they're going to be looking into McDonald's a little bit more. And off to the side, in between commercial here, we had a conversation about franchises and just kind of talked about logistics of, you know, some things people might not realize.
Yeah, the fast food industry is really kind of interesting. The public perception is every little store is like a little franchisee, just a mom-and-pop operation. But the way it's set up nationally is you have McDonald's as a parent company. They have a lot of corporate stores. Mostly it's franchisees. And in every geographic area, there's usually one principal franchisee. Wendy's has been going from corporate stores in Pennsylvania to franchising. So the main franchisee around here has at least 50, 60 locations. They make quite a bit of money on it.
How recent is that shift?
The Wendy's shift is literally the last few months. Yeah. It's very recent. We suspect, we're not sure, it's in response to the Fight for 15 campaign.
Because that makes it harder for people to go out to win that $15?
Yeah. Here's how it makes it harder. When you have a legal issue with a particular location and you want to file something against the particular location, the particular franchisee, that's very easy. But if you want to actually get to who's in control, who really holds the power, holds the money, you want to deal with the corporate. So it's Wendy's corporate based in Ohio. It's McDonald's corporate based in Illinois. And they have these wonderful documents in which they claim they regulate everything these stores do down to the color of the lettering on their signs and the uniforms. And then they say, but whatever you do with the employees is your business. We have no control over it. So there are cases pending, particularly one in New York City, where we've alleged, and the trial's literally going to last 6 to 9 months, that the McDonald's parent company and its franchisees across the country are a joint and single employer, that basically the parent company is controlling this when you get right down to it. And right now that involves cases from New York, Pennsylvania, Illinois, and California.
Wow.
And by the way, the House Republicans have threatened to defund the National Labor Relations Board over that case.
Of course
over
they
that
have.
Case.
Yes,
that's interesting.
Well, you know, they did a similar thing when the National Labor Relations Board issued a complaint against Boeing because they were moving their plants to South Carolina. They've had hearings, and they've said, we should, if you don't stop this case, we're going to defund you. Now, they haven't formally done it yet, but they've been threatening it. People from the labor board are hauled up to Congress to testify about stuff. But so, you know, there's politics and then there's the law. So
well, that sure sounds like big government sticking their nose in something to me, but I don't know.
But these are conservatives who believe in limited government. Except when it comes to this or women's rights or things like that.
Right.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Sometimes people just make me just wonder.
Yep. There was a legit facepalm there. No one can see that, but Brittany had a facepalm moment. It's true. Oh, man.
All right. And you guys also wanted to mention the Women's Law Project.
Yeah, sure. On Friday evening here in downtown Pittsburgh, the Women's Law Project is hosting their annual Rights to Realities celebration, and our law firm is proud to be one of many sponsors of that organization's event. When I was just looking at their website, which is www.womenslawproject.org, yes, one of the issues that pops up prominently on the first page is advocacy for one fair wage, and also that they point out that, yes, minimum wage is a women's issue, and so they're clearly addressing some of the issues that we were just talking about generally, the Fight for 15. It's a great organization. It's had a Pittsburgh presence for several years now, and I know you've done some work with them as well.
In fact, they've filed an amicus brief in a case to preserve paid sick leave in Pennsylvania. Their named plaintiff is one of the fast food activists, the Fight for 15 activists.
Oh, wow. Excellent. And I, in fact, know someone personally who is working with them on a case of sexual harassment and also wage theft. So they do a lot of good stuff.
They do.
Yeah.
Not the sexual harassment and wage theft, the fighting of the sexual harassment and wage theft.
We got that.
Right.
Just
right.
To be clear.
Yeah, just in case.
Yeah, it's a great website. They've got a number of links to, you know, recent and ongoing activities. And, you know, they say that their mission is to create a more just and equitable society by advancing the rights and status of all women throughout their lives. To this end, we engage in high-impact litigation, advocacy, and education. So it's a wonderful organization, and congratulations to them on celebrating yet another year of major accomplishments.
And if anyone wants to attend, come to the Fairmont Hotel in downtown Pittsburgh this Friday at 5:30.
Okay, excellent. Awesome.
We will definitely want to check that one out. Anything else we should be talking about today? What else is in your works?
Well, what will be coming up, people have probably been watching the news a little bit about elections. We'll be, with our union clients particularly, we'll be doing a lot of what we call election protection work, protecting people's rights to vote. We've beaten back voter ID in this state. It's still an issue in other states. But we think with the Donald Trump phenomena, there's going to be election protection issues coming up this fall, particularly given some of his base of support. It is a concern.
That's a pretty valid concern. Yeah. Did you guys have many issues you dealt with the primaries?
Now, the primaries were actually pretty quiet, but the primaries historically have been pretty quiet. It tends to be, the issues tend to come up in the general election when one political party, because of changing demographics in this country, figures the only way they're going to win if they suppress the vote and suppress voter turnout.
Yeah, I worked at my polling place. I have since 2001. That's not a coincidence. I was so offended mm-hmm. by what happened in the year 2000 that at that point I agreed to become an inspector at mm-hmm. my polling place and have been one ever since. And it's right in the heart of Oakland, so it includes not only my neighborhood where I live, but also a lot of students who live in the area. And, you know, there were some minor issues having to do with students who thought that they could vote even though they had registered as an independent, you know, sort of a rookie mistake, as I would say, not knowing that at least in primaries, you have to be, it's a closed primary, Pennsylvania, and you have to be registered one of the parties. But no major issues, and the lines were, you know, flowing very smoothly. But November, it's going to be, you know, a lot busier, and we were sort of practicing about, you know, sort of best practices as far as what would work in terms of keeping the flow moving.
Did you see, like, a huge uptake in people?
You know, it was a huge uptick in terms of just what's typically the spring vote. Mm-hmm. It was still, you know, significantly less than a November election in any year. Mm-hmm. But for a spring primary, it was pretty high. It was, and I think it, partly because of the contested elections. Our polling place is mostly Democratic, but I noticed a slight increase in the number of Republican votes, but not a significant number.
Yeah, one of the worrisome national trends is after Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act was struck down, seven or eight southern states passed very restrictive voter ID rules, restrictions on early voting, and things like that. There's still litigation pending. We're anticipating more issues. That has the potential to really suppress the vote, and particularly the southern states, and also places like Wisconsin, frankly.
Right. At the risk of getting too wonky, what is Section 5?
Section 5, when as a result of the Civil Rights Movement, Voting Rights Act was passed, and Section 5 put certain southern states, but other states with a history of suppressing the vote, under sort of special provision or supervision. And what it meant is that they introduce anything that had the potential to suppress the vote or restrict voting rights, voter IDs, they had to get pre-clearance from the Department of Justice. That was struck down. They no longer have to get pre-clearance, so they started passing this legislation. So there's now lawsuits pending. Some lawsuits are going well, some are not. The one in Pennsylvania in the last election cycle went well, so we do now have voter ID here. We were one of the few states that came out of that okay.
Yeah, in Pennsylvania, the only time you have to show voter ID is if you're first-time voter or first-time voting at a particular location, if you change your address and something like that. Some people, just because it's been in the news, were showing ID, and we kept telling them, no, we don't need to see it. You know, it's not required. We just need you to sign your name. But first-time voters still have to do that in Pennsylvania. But in other states, it's very different. Everyone has to show has to have it.
But we encourage all listeners to do get out the vote work. And that's the best way to deal with these restrictions on voting. Just get the vote out. Encourage your friends, union members to get out to vote.
And also, if anyone's curious, you can register to vote online now. Pennsylvania has made it super simple and easy, mm-hmm. and I love to tell people about this because of I know a bunch of people just my age who have actually gone out to vote this time because they registered online, and the online part of it has made it a lot more convenient. And from my understanding, Pennsylvania has had a big jump in the number of registered voters since they've gone online.
I think so. I don't know what the numbers are, but I know it's gone up.
Awesome.
Do you guys have a take on what happened in Nevada? Was it Nevada or Arizona? I just thought
Arizona.
Arizona, yes. Thank you.
Yeah. one particular county. Yeah. Maricopa.
It was. I think it was internal. I think it was. I'm not quite sure of their exact procedures, but I think it was caucuses being run by the political parties, and they completely missed this. I mean, it was a cluster. Fill in the blanks, mm-hmm. And that's a concern for what's going to happen next time, because the voting officials weren't prepared for it, the parties weren't prepared for it. A lot of people stood in line for 5-6 hours, didn't vote, and a lot of people walked away.
Right, for reasons that have never been made clear, they decided to significantly cut the number of polling places in Maricopa County, where Phoenix is located, and it's my understanding that. They say that that's not going to be repeated in November, but there's a lot of power at the local level and things like that. And so wherever you're at, you need to be vigilant.
Yeah. Voting is really balkanized in this country. There's certain federal statutes, but principally there's a state statute that sets out procedures. But really where the power for voting is in this country is at the county level. So that's where the issues come up. And a common issue that comes up is insufficient machines in minority areas and student areas in the general election. And we see that every election cycle, not just in Pennsylvania, but across the country.
I think that's very, very true. That's something I've read a lot. And just ever after the primary, there's always those stories. You read them in the news, like, oh, this happened. And a lot of times they are in, like, lower-income, impoverished areas, or there's a lot of students, it's near university, and they're just not quite equipped to handle it. But I think that we can hopefully, you know, advocate and move in a better direction for that.
Yes.
Though I know how this stuff goes very slowly. All right. Well, we've got about a minute or so left. So before we go, if anybody, you know, has any questions about anything, wants to reach out to you guys, how can they reach you?
Well, we also have a website, www.unionlawyers.net. And we can also be reached the old-fashioned way by phone. We have a toll-free number, 1-888-391-6944. We have an office in downtown Pittsburgh. For many matters, we travel all over Western PA. We have been known to make house calls in various situations as well. But that's the best way to reach us anywhere in the country.
Yeah, and if people are interested, they can also reach us by email, mike@unionlawyers.net or j@unionlawyers.net. And if there's people out there that want to volunteer to do election protection work, either nonpartisan or partisan, we can put them in touch with folks to do that.
Awesome. Well, I will definitely, if we hear anything, we will send them your way for sure.
Okay.
Thank you guys so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
All right. That was Mike Healy and Jay Hornack. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman, and you've been listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.